Hi, and welcome to episode 49 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to jump on the bouncy castle of independent comics this week are writer, artist, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And if this man was a biscuit, he would have to be a double stuff Oreo. It's Danny Esmond.
What's that? I don't know what it is. That's a bird. You just admitted to doing a poo in a hot tub as well, I heard you.
No, that wasn't me. You know it wasn't me. Was it, Dan?
Don't know what you're talking about. I thought
you. Yeah,
all right. I'll see what you're doing there.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be one of those weeks, isn't it? I don't stand a chance, do I? I already feel like a deer in the headlights. Don't join in with them. That's all I've got to say to our guest this week.
No, that's encouraged.
Shut up, Dan. Our guest this week is a creator making the sort of comics you don't see every day. He also did his bit in keeping London Super Comic Con safer by looking after us for the 2 days we were there. We're hugely grateful about that, and I think the general public is as well. All jokes aside, though, his book is the abstract sequential comic The Intercostal, which is such a unique, interesting, and awesome riff on the medium of comics that we just had to have him on the show. I think we can all agree. So it's our pleasure to welcome Gareth A. Hopkins to the show. Hello, Gareth.
All right, Gareth.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Everyone wanted to say hello at the same time. That's how much we want to talk to you.
This is, I love this, because this is like the fake bit where we pretend we haven't been speaking for the last half an hour.
Why do you have to do this, Tony? Why do you ruin the illusion?
To show what good actors we are. Like that fake laughing we do occasionally. I like that. That's the fake laughing thing we do. That's good.
I don't know what you mean. Do you not like magic, Tony? Is that what it is?
I don't like magic.
You don't like magic, do you?
It's ruined for me sometimes when people show me it's real.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. And that's what you do. All these wonderful listeners who think these guys just get together in the same room every week.
It's like the time George Takei got me to sit on his lap as a kid and he beamed me up to heaven.
Not libelous.
No, not at all. No. It's a joke. No. Yeah. No. Parody laws apply. Yeah.
This whole show is a parody of life, basically. So it's certainly going to be an interesting show. Gareth's all prepared to talk about his book and lots of other comics.
I think it was until then.
Just like every guest, as soon as he starts talking to us, he suddenly realises what a mistake it was. But before we get talking about the Intercostal, we've got comics, events and all kinds going on. Tony, you're currently calling us from the middle of a Portaloo on the M25, isn't that right?
Well, similar. I'm in a travel lodge in Lancaster. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I'm sitting, you know, that shitty little chair you get and a shitty little desk you get in a hotel room? I'm sitting at that, looking out at the skyline of Lancashire. I don't really like it up here, to be fair.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tattoos on women's legs, I've noticed.
Yeah, right. Are you completely naked on a wicker chair? That's what everyone wants
to
know.
Completely naked. No, I've got headphones on.
Keeping it real. That's Tony Esmond.
Tell reception to give that chair a wipe down.
Some stains never come out. I'm telling them it's strawberries.
Oh, God!
Not blood. That was unclear.
Chocolate-covered strawberries. No, we're not going there. Come on. This could be a serious show this week.
But that.
Why are you sitting naked on a wicker chair, Tony? What have you been doing?
I've been to Lancaster Comics Day, which is organised by the Friends of Lancaster Library and Jonathan H. Freeman himself, my buddy from down the tubes. It's a little event. We talked about it previously. Really good. Really fun. I went out last night with John and Lou Stringer, which is a great night out. John sort of left a bit early and then said, "Oh, Tony, can you show Lou back to his hotel?" And then as the pub closed and we were about 6 or 7 pints in, I realised I didn't know where we were. So that was quite exciting. I wandered around Lancaster a bit. Lou's great company. I've got to tell you, we should get him on the show. Great sort of comics historian and drinks a lot, which is good.
I used to read that Combat Colin all the time.
Lots of people are big fans of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about possibly putting it all out in one big, graphic novel type sort of trade paperback thing. Yeah, it should be good. So at it today were at the convention, not at it, was Alex Packmadel, who we did a little interview with. So that should be hopefully maybe in next week's show. It's quite interesting.
Yes, I did Tony got a couple of little bits of audio, didn't you, Tony?
So. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get them out until next week. But and Dan Charnley, who's probably one of my favourite people ever after today. What a funny geezer. Yeah, absolutely scream. Yeah, we had a really good laugh. We're just sort of screaming at each other and laughing. And then I said, oh, should we turn the tape recorder on? And then he accused me of holding my penis, which is quite funny. A nice funny joke.
He's not the first. He will not be the last.
Yeah, he won't be the last, my friend, yeah. And, he's given me some comics for you two guys, actually, which you must send to you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very good. And the mighty Gibster was there. He turned up. Then me and him sat outside in the sun and had a pint, and I think I've got sunburn. I think I've actually got sunstroke, to be fair, because I feel a bit weird.
Oh, brilliant. Is this going to be a sort of like a Hunter S. Thompson version of Tony Esmond? Is that what
it might be, yeah. I'm a bit light-headed.
Help us.
Yeah. Just going to go and bang on the hen night. They're in the room next door in a second and see what they're up to.
Oh, God.
And then Tom Ward and Chris Welsh were there. They're the usual fucking larking about, good company. And past guest Sean Phillips, who had a great chat with about old Marvel and DC comics. Very good. Yeah, it's a great day, actually. Back issues, small press, professionals, panels, competitions, you name it, all there in one space. There's a lot of conventions you could take take notice of that, I've got to tell you. So I didn't go to Swindon Comic Con, and I didn't see any of the Eagle.
That's a shame.
I say any Funko Pops?
Yeah. But, yeah, there was one, actually. I think there was a Black Panther on one of the comic tables, but that's acceptable. I let one slide. Yeah. I didn't turn the table over and, stamp it or anything. Yeah.
that was
a good day, actually. Really good. And really, really hot and sunny, which makes a change, isn't it?
It's been such a beautiful day today.
It has been. Yeah, in many ways.
All those comic book artists that are listening now just think, I didn't see it. I was inside. Working.
Yeah, I'm at the PO now.
Yeah, Mark Lamming, we're talking to you because we know you don't leave your house. Yeah.
On the night shift.
Blackout curtains.
Yeah. How does he draw with blackout curtains? Oh, I suppose he switches the light on. Anyway.
That's our talent.
Answer your own question there.
Yeah, well, that's me.
So that was good, actually. I recommend it next year. I'll recommend it this year. No one fucking listens, but I recommend it next year. Very good it was. Yeah, really good fun.
It's interesting. It's all about comics, isn't it? It's not got the old celebrities and film stars, etc. Because you mentioned MCM. I've read a couple of things that from other completely unrelated kind of comic and news sites that say they see there's a few more comics at MCM and they're really kind of glad that they're making a bit more of an appearance. Mm. Obviously, I can't comment. I wasn't there, but it does seem there's a lot of people that actually do want to see comic books there.
There's a lot of conversation about it today, actually, funny enough. Yeah. Mm.
One show I do want to know more about was Leicester Comic Con, which happened this weekend. I know that there was a lot of people, like small press guys there, and I hear a lot on Twitter and stuff how it was a great weekend for everyone that went there. So get in touch with us and let us know if that's the case or if you're completely lying.
Yeah, it's a good one to go to. Yeah, we like to know the good ones to go to, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
bring out that fucking stupid Chewbacca mum quickly.
Here we go. Right, now, before you say, Dan, right, I think everyone in the world knows about Chewbacca mum. Well, I'm not going to say mum, because this is an American show. But and I say that when I first watched that clip, I thought it was brilliant. I was laughing. And then it seemed like the multimedia world just completely swallowed it up, and now I don't think I'll ever be able to watch it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When things become popular, we don't like them in the comics world, do we? You know what I mean?
That's the rule, though, isn't it?
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as somebody likes it, you can't like it anymore.
Yeah.
It's very true.
They had I can't remember what artist pointed out who was at the con, but she was sitting on a booth signing signatures for $20.
Next to John Cusack.
Yeah, poor John Cusack.
I know.
Man, he's worked hard at his fucking career and he's chosen part.
He's a legend, Dave Johnson was the guy that posted
Dave Johnson,
that picture.
That was it.
Yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. To be fair, I reckon I texted you two, didn't I? She's 2 years away from porn.
I don't want to watch that.
I don't know, I'll give it a go.
She's wearing a Chewbacca mask, you wouldn't know what end you're looking at.
Oh my God. That can be nice and bad.
What would you call it? Like a Chewbacca? I don't know. What would you call it?
Oh, I don't know.
Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Oh, that's already been done, Tony. Come on.
I know. There must be one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
don't know. It's quite cool.
Wookie Nookie. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Nice one.
Yeah, that's like the Carry On one, isn't it? Carry On Wookie Nookie. Yeah.
But you know, you sort of see some cynical money grabs. That's fucking like a new low. Oh, it's just, yeah. Whoa, okay. Yeah. But, he makes a few quid, fair enough.
At the end of the... I don't know, I hate to play devil's advocate, but can you begrudge anyone from trying to make a bit of money?
Yeah, can you?
I wouldn't do that.
Okay. I'm not saying we would, but you know. Yeah. You know,
That's one row down from the Geordie Shore's Holly Hagen workout video. Do you know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned.
You know too much about Geordie Shore, Tony.
I know it all. That's a good video, actually.
If I had a similar video on YouTube and it was getting that amount of traffic, I would turn the ads on. That'd be about the limit.
Yeah. I'd turn it off because I'd be embarrassed that I look a bit like a flid.
Right.
I think I'm allowed to say that.
That's it.
I'm putting a poll on the awesome pod.
Oh, this is good. What's this
going to
be?
On the Twitter feed. Right, I'm going to do a poll. All you people out there, be prepared, because the day the show goes out on Monday, there's going to be a poll with, do you want to see a video of Tony in a Chewbacca mask?
Listen, you can't really tell, to be fair, can you? You've seen a picture of me standing next to Chewbacca, and you said you couldn't tell the difference. Do you remember? Your missus took the picture of me. Do you remember?
Yeah,
look quite sexy.
Yeah, I know. I've got it laminated.
Do you get lady Wookiees? I don't know.
Yeah, of course you do.
Yeah, I don't know. Do I? I'm not like weird.
I'm sure there's a lot of people listening. I
can blame that sun because I'm definitely affected. I'm feeling a bit lightheaded. I refuse to do anything that Vince tries to make me do.
And don't worry, listeners. We're going to take complete advantage of the fact that Tony's going a bit weird tonight. Oh dear. Yeah, so there's lots of cool stuff. Even though, much love to John Cusack and Chewbacca Mum, leave him alone.
Yeah.
He's working hard.
Oh, they're a couple now, apparently.
couple what?
He's riding her coattails to stardom.
Chewbacca Mum, the movie.
It's
coming then.
It's going to happen. In a couple of years, that's what Tony said. Anyway, Comics. Right. Tony, what's your choice for this week?
Yeah, I've got a really good one, actually. I got sent it by Andy Barron. It's a book called Mantra, Tales from the World of Om. 66 pages, full colour. To be fair, probably one of the hardest... I sent you a couple of pages, didn't I, through on the our little back room. Probably one of the hardest things to describe. So I'm going to try this. This is what I'm going to try. So follow me on this for a minute, okay? Imagine the world of the Moomins. We all know the Moomins, don't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Imagine the Moomins. They're all at their little house, and they decide to go ice skating. They do that in the Moomins, don't they? They go ice skating in Sweden, don't they?
I think so.
So they go, probably. Right, let's go. They go, little pal Snufkin. We know him, don't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
They say, well, let's go. So they wander out of their house, and they see like a big pile of mushrooms.
Nice.
And the Snork Maiden, I had to look that up, what that was, said, let's eat
these mushrooms.
I said, let's eat these mushrooms. And then, so with glee, they sort of sit down and they all eat the mushrooms. And from that point, their faces melt away and their whole world goes fucking mental. That's kind of where this book is, to be fair.
Interesting.
The thing is, that isn't what the story is. That's just Tony describing what the
story
is.
My weekend. So it goes from being, it would go from being like normal sort of Moomin country, you know, in snowy Sweden, to like properly fucked up. So, you know, eyeballs sitting on people's chests, duck-billed horses, pointy-nippled weird creatures. The creatures who have nipples on their heads, they're quite cool. Sort of steamy swamps, sort of flowery psychedelic fields, and just sort of brain and eye-melting brilliance. I absolutely loved it. It's just a colourful assault on your face. This comic, you know, it really is.
What a pull quote.
It's completely original on every page, and it's just, I don't know, did you remember the album cover, Axe and Moxoa for the Grateful Dead? It's sort of psychedelic sort of album cover. Anyone remember that? It's like that turned up again. It's like that, but worse, you know, or better, I suppose. But saying that, it's actually got a sort of story to it. It's got like a real sort of through line of narrative that kind of makes twisted sense in this sort of weird, strange environment, you know? What I really liked about it, one of the things I really liked, if you go to the back cover, it's got, you remember on the what are they called, ident boxes on Marvel Comics, and on the left-hand side you get who's in the Avengers at the moment, or who's in the Defenders, and all that sort of thing. It's got like a thing on the back, and it's got the pictures of all the different weird characters, and their names underneath it, and it sort of brought it back. It's like a little hint of that sort of team book thing from Marvel. Probably my favourite story, it was a story called The Storm. And in that, there's a character called Om, and he's laying under a sort of withered and dried out sort of desert tree on an alien looking sort of red desert. And he or she, you can't really figure out what it is bleeding. And the blood sort of is soaking into the ground. These sort of strange alien carrion creatures are sort of flying overhead. And then there's a sort of like an absolutely humongous storm that sort of starts beating down. And as the rain beats down, the blood mixes with the earth, and sort of vines start piling up, and trees come out, and there's a sort of, they sort of snake up around its body, and Om becomes part of the ground, and there's these pages which are just sort of diamond shaped pages with a big flower opening up in the middle of the page. Just absolutely incredibly beautiful stuff, you know. And it's sort of the page begins to fill with mushrooms and greenery and flowers and butterflies and sort of brightly emblazoned sort of lizards who eat the butterflies, and this sort of metaphor for life from death sort of thing is going on, but with a real sort of strange vibe to it. Full colour, completely original, but completely disorientating. You read it and you're like, you're sort of swept along in this sort of strangeness of it, really. I can see a sort of straight line from children's animation of the 70s and 80s, movies like, does anyone see Ralph Bakshi's Wizards?
Yeah,
a little bit of the strangeness like that. And it's maybe the work of sort of Leo and some sort of Euro comics and stuff like that. The art's really nice, really clean sort of artwork. It's very sharp, and the designs are really, really good. It's a book that's sort of just really difficult to describe, I suppose, in a way. The colour is really well done. It's just beautiful. But you can see a straight line. For example, you can see the links with it to the 1960s, like Zap Comics with an X. The 1970s, you can see sort of a little bit of heavy metal and Epic magazine, and then all the way through to the 1990s indie books like Eclipse or Mirage Studios, or even the sort of acid house craze from back then. You know, right up to sort of abstracty, sort of original small press stuff now. But it is adult. It's not like a fairy tale. It's quite gruesome at points, quite sexual at moments. There's a creature that wanders around with its junk on show, a la sort of Watchmen type stuff, you know. Yeah, very good. Absolutely loved it. Plus, he sent me a really good like sketch as a sort of bookmark in it. Really nice. And he's a London-based illustrator. He launched the book, however, at TCAF, the last one that's just gone. You can find him at andyillustrates.com. And he's on Twitter at omcomics, omcomics. Really, really good stuff. Look him out. I think he's beginning to ship the book out to sort of indie comic shops and stuff like that. But you can order it. Go to his website and order a copy. And he's doing some other stuff. And he sent it in. He's very kindly, and he sort of sent me a little sort of praise here of what it was about. Yeah, good guy. And that's something I'd never heard of before as well. Really nice. Just suddenly get it through the post. Very good. That's my one.
Nice. And what a book to talk about when you're slightly going off your face.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Did that help or hinder?
It's hard to tell at the moment. But I'm quite aroused.
Yeah.
That beginning, the description was brilliant. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
I mean, I want to read both books, this one and the one you described.
Yeah, let's do it.
I want that. Let's make the awesome comics Moomin story. Yeah. Call it like Blooming Moomins or something. Anyway, that one sounds awesome. Dan, what have you got this week?
We had a couple of comics sent through to us, one of them being Chum. Issue 1 by Comics Drive. Which I think we sent to us a couple of weeks ago because the second issue had just come out, but I've only just got around to reading it. It's written by show favourite Ryan Lindsay, art by Sammy Kivela, and the colours by Sammy Kivela and a chap named Vic Malhotra.
Well done,
29
Dan.
Pages long. Yeah, I managed didn't do too badly on that one.
That's nice.
And you can get it from Comixology. I'm not sure. I presume there'd be hard copies of it knocking around. I'm not too sure.
I would imagine so. I mean, this one's got... I mean, I don't know how much Comics Tribe get into, especially like UK shops. But yeah, there must be, because there's been quite a push on this marketing-wise, hasn't there, I think?
Because Exit Generation, that was in comic shops and stuff. That was Comics Tribe, wasn't it?
Ah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Oh, that was great. Then. Yeah.
Yeah. So presumably, well, issue two should be in the shops now then by the time, yeah, I guess you listen to this review.
Yeah. I've yet to read it, but the covers look, I love the covers.
Yeah, I was going to mention the covers. I think there's a 5 variations on the cover, on the first one, and the cover for the second I've seen, and they're fantastic. Mm. They're really, really good. I mean, it's like a kind of a blood water, the kind of with sharks and a yin yang kind of symbol underneath, like a surfboard, and the kind of the heroine of the story is laying on top of this surfboard with kind of like dollars floating around.
Yeah,
it's a really evocative cover. It's only done in the three red, black, and white.
Yeah.
So very striking.
You do that, and you put sharks in it, and it's you've won me over. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the idea of sort of someone laying on the shark on the surfboard with the sharks underneath them. Such a great. It's a real good setup for the kind of story you're going to get within.
Yeah.
I read the blurb. Summer Stanwyck feels like she's drowning. She tends bar on the island she grew up on. The local cop is about to come her ex-husband, and she's killing time screwing the local reefer kingpin. When a bag full of cash and drugs falls into her lap, she sees a way out, and anyone who gets in her way is shark bait. So, nice little setup.
So, it's a crime book, is it? Is that that sort of?
Yeah, Ryan's described it as surf noir, which is pretty much bang on the nose with it. It's kind of got this kind of gritty kind of crime thing, but set like on a beach.
Yeah,
but the island in itself that he's described it and the characters in it are very much noir-like, very gritty and kind of...
Is this set in Australia? Because I know Ryan's an Australian creator. Or does it...
I don't know. Maybe I missed that detail.
It may not be the case. You know, it could, you know, that beach could be Miami, Sydney, wherever, couldn't it? I mean, Brighton, probably, but...
No. Surfing's not so great in Brighton. But like kind of most first issues, it spends the time quickly kind of getting the characters introduced, kind of what the dynamics are. By the end of the end of the first issue, kind of an act happens, like a violent act, essentially starts triggering a sequence of events. This is where I think the kind of the chum title comes from. Not only does it play into kind of the beach thing, but also like there's chum and blood in the water. And all the sharks are kind of getting riled up. So where you've got all these players on the island, this event kind of like starts mixing up. And obviously the aforementioned Summer, the bartender, is like at the center of it. And it's really good. It's a good setup for the next issue. I'm really interested to see what kind of comes of it. I would say the writing's excellent. I really like the story. The art, I don't think it's so complimentary to the story. I mean, the covers are absolutely fantastic. I could quite happily see the art style all like that, this red, black, and white. But it goes into kind of full color comic thing, and it's quite. I don't mean to be nasty to the artist, but it's quite safe. It's not kind of too. Okay. I don't know. I just would like to think a bit more, not Sin City esque, but along those lines.
Cool, you know what
I
mean? Sin City, Dan. Come on, that's going from one extreme to the other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit much, but kind of like just, I don't know, just reconsider the artistic choices. That's all I can say. Yeah, and not, no, it's crap, not at all. But you know.
Yeah, I know.
So,
we're big fans of Ryan on this show, you know, he I think he loves his noir stories. I know he's a massive Daredevil fan, for instance.
Yeah,
he's written like essays about that, which are thoroughly fascinating in their own
the script actually. And this fantastic. I mean, I introduced someone to that the other one he does about the kind of the monsters kind of controlling humanity. I got someone onto that this week and they loved it.
Oh god, my brain's gone blank now. Negative Space, is that?
Yes, yeah, Negative Space, and they just loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and also like Dear Editor, he's done that. There's been so much, you know. I think he's definitely. It's only a matter of time, isn't it, before he takes a step up to the next level.
Yeah.
I say next level. He's already on a high level. Do you know what I mean? But I can see him. I think he might have worked for one of the big two, or the very. I mean, obviously he's worked with Dark Horse, hasn't he? Because isn't Negative Space Dark Horse?
Yep.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Chum has just come out, so you know I'm sure all those people out there like they would have seen it somewhere, these striking sort of covers. So
I mean, if you're kind of into like crime noir,
yeah,
definitely give it a go.
Does it have that kind of like 100 Bullets kind of vibe?
Sort of, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
It's got certainly elements of that in. You feel really kind of like the place was really lived in, and kind of it's like the kind of the bar that the main character runs. You feel like it could be an actual place you could go to, like with the kind of scratches on the bar and the smell of the alcohol and the dank kind of. It's really evocative, the story.
Toilet smell like piss.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
The flush doesn't work. God, what am I going to do?
Yeah, the island's a bit kind of grim and grin and gritty and kind of. It's really well done.
Are you going to go back for issue two? The story was enough to keep you going.
We've actually been sent issue two, so I will be reading that.
Well, when you do, Dan, I'm gonna read it myself, and then I'm gonna see what you thought of issue two as well.
See what you think.
Yeah, because you know, with any sort of story, I think if you're making the decision to go ahead with it, unless the first issue is completely terrible, sorry to anyone who's read my comic, by the way, then I think you've got to give it a couple of issues, haven't you, before you decide.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's not for me.
I think good art can see kind of slightly shady writing through and vice versa, but when both are kind of lacking and not really understanding what they're doing, that's when you kind of think, well, not sure about this.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yeah, because then it's a difficult decision, isn't it? so Chum's out now on Comixology and pretty much everywhere if you see it,
so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Right,
go check out.
Yeah, so we've gone from like some weird surreal fever dream to some noir. So was it
Greek one noir?
Was it surf noir? That's what it was.
Surf noir.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love.
He was asking people to tweet him. I think it's 5 or 6 word surf noir tales. Just using 5 or 6 words, and he's printed a couple in the comic. They sound really good.
Oh God! Now I'd love to do that on air right now. But it would just be like 5 minutes of blank air trying to think of something to say. But yes, Chum, yeah, give us your five word surf noir so we can pass it off as our own.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Right, my choice for this week is a story called Above the Clouds by, and I apologise in advance if I say this wrong, Melissa Pagliuzza. Yeah, that's her name.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that sounded all right, didn't it? It sounded like a name, didn't it?
I don't know how it's written, so I don't
know. This is going to be fascinating radio. Pagluica. Yeah.
Not
so easy, is it?
Well, me and you are notoriously bad at doing
that. We're terrible. So sorry, Melissa, for pronouncing your name wrong. However,
as if she'd ever be listening to this.
Yeah, well, she may do. Well, hopefully. No, but your book is brilliant. And here's the basic setup for it. A young girl is given a book about a hero who must go on a quest to save a great tree from darkness. Only, the story isn't finished, and now she must get an author who doesn't believe in himself to finish the book. So it's quite different from Surf Noir and some crazy fever dream. It's quite fantastical this week, and I would honestly say it's an all-ages book. Well, it seems like that so far. And I loved it. This is a comic that tells two interweaving stories in a really nice way. Now, the larger overall story... is this girl, Eily, who reads this book and becomes fascinated with the story. But all of that, all the sort of real world, if we can call it that, is told completely wordless. There's absolutely no speech bubbles or anything like that. It's just all in the actions. But also in the first issue, you actually get to read like some of the actual book itself. So when she reads it, the reader reads along with her. And that is told with words. A narration and like kind of how the book is, and it's got beautiful artwork, like beautiful dreamlike images with like flowing clouds and like streams of cloud and smoke and water. There's hooded figures and like fantastical birds, and everything's quite fantastical and almost and very mythic and dreamlike. Wonderful design and like poetic layout. I know I showed the guys a couple of those pages. I sent them a message with a couple of these to sort of say, this is what I'm going to talk about earlier. And I know certainly when I put on Twitter the other day that this is a book I'm going to talk about this week. John Freeman himself said it just looked beautiful because it's that artwork that's very striking, but not in your face, not in your face kind of way. Yeah, very skillful. And I think to do a wordless narrative can be a pretty tricky thing. I'm sure Gareth can.
Don't worry about narratives.
He will just do whatever the hell he wants. No, but I think it can. It's a difficult thing, isn't it? Because comics are, of course, they're a visual medium. But I think to say doing a wordless sort of narrative story is easy would be a very stupid thing, because it has to. You have to be able to follow it. You know, you don't have any reliance on speech bubbles. You have to know exactly what a person's thinking and the way they're reacting. It's all in the facial expressions. I'd love to try it one day, personally, see if I could do it. I know a great example of this is in proper books, Butterfly Gate. Have you read Butterfly Gate?
No.
It's great.
Such a good book. And that's a fantastic example of like telling a sort of a wordless narrative that you can follow without any speech bubbles, without anything like that, you know, just the visuals alone.
To be fair, I've pulled myself out of some spots when doing comics where I've done a panel and then realised, oh, fuck, you can't really tell what they're supposed to be doing there.
Yeah.
So you put someone saying, like, no, don't press that button or something similar. Do you know what I mean? Like, to kind of rescue yourself out of it.
So if anyone spots that panel in Vanguard,
no, where it says, panel,
don't press that button. Yeah. But it is... Like, words can help you out of a tight spot, can't they? That's totally what it is.
Yeah.
So if you have, like, you know, if you're choosing to tell this story, especially the real story, I think that was the twist I liked, the fact that in the real world it's told without any words, but the actual storybook itself has the words, and it's quite very poetic as well. I thought that was a nice touch, a nice twist on it.
Yeah.
But I think Melissa, like, handles it, like, brilliantly, and it helps that, like, her work's just an absolute joy to look at. That was one of the first things that took me up. I flicked through it at first. I bought it on Comixology, I was just struck by it immediately. And so I do you ever do that? Sometimes you pick up a book and you flick through it and you're taken by it. But it's only when you read through it from the very beginning and that you totally get sort of grabbed and pulled into the story. Have you had that before?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Good. I'm not on my own. Sometimes I feel very lonely.
No, but I was gonna think you're speaking, you can go, because otherwise you don't know the other person's still there.
Yeah. When they're all nodding, folks, I can't tell that they're doing that. We're not in the same room. Let's just break the magic there. The artwork in here is just wonderful. Like, it's got soft lines and pastel watercolors, you know, it's not heavy on the color, and shows a real efficiency and, like, economic use of, like, space to tell the tale, for dramatic reasons. I'm not sure how much she works in digital or if, like, it's all original, but if some of the pages are original, some of them will be a beautiful thing to frame and have on your wall, especially some of those pages of the actual storybook themselves, because they're gorgeous. The characters are fascinating as well. I could talk about their artwork all day, but the characters are fascinating. As there's like a love triangle between like two warriors and Eileen's older sister. What makes it even more interesting is that one of those warriors is the person who has written the bewitching tale that like Eileen becomes obsessed with, which I quite like. I always like the idea of like when you've got a character who you think is one way, but then they've got more layers to them. You know, it's not so cliched. You know, so I think this is certainly a story.
That's what you're like me.
Yeah. You're like an onion. You're my onion, aren't you?
Well, I smell like one.
Yeah, you smell like one. And you make people cry.
That is true.
Yeah. But this is, I think this is a story that is going to have some unique and unexpected turns along the way. And at the end of the day, I'm glad that I once again took a chance on a little indie book that I knew nothing about, rather than shell out coin on like a bigger company book. And I love, you know, Marvel, DC, all of that, you know, but sometimes like you spend a lot of money and it might not have been so delightful to read. Whereas this was 69p an issue on Comixology. So I bought the first two issues. The second one has just come out, which I thought was an absolute bargain. And I just discovered today, that although I read it in the issues, it started life and continues to be alive to this day as a webcomic.
Free.
Yeah, so it's free as well. I think that in some way sort of makes sense why it's so cheap on Comixology, I think.
Right.
You know, because you don't want to offer a free comic and then say, right, and each issue is going to cost you £4.
Yeah.
Who's going to do that?
To be fair, it's so much easier reading on Comixology than it is done on a website.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yes. That's how I prefer to read it. But if you want to read it from the beginning, you can read that comic at cloudscomic.com. Like I say, you can find Above the Clouds on Comixology. You can Melissa Paglusia, you can follow her on Twitter at darksunrose, all lowercase. She's definitely an artist to follow, I think, because she's got some lovely work. So I'm on for the ride for this one. So I think I'm going to keep buying it on Comixology because it's not going to put me out of pocket, and I'm enjoying the story. I think it's lovely. You know, it's not a surf noir or some crazy brain melting Moomin tale, but it makes me happy. So Gareth, what comic would you like to talk about this week?
This is a bit that I've been dreading because I want to come up with some really cool underground comic that I always heard. But I just spent all my time reading Best of 2000 AD Monthly from like 1984.
Man,
brilliant!
Nothing wrong with that.
Just last night, luckily, me and my son and my daughter, I was putting them to bed and asked what they wanted to read, and they said Dungeon Fun.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you've talked about it before.
We've heard about it. I believe Sarah Millman, is she the one that spoke about it? Emily Owen, yes. Oh, wonderful Emily Owen.
And Mighty Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I met Colin at LSCC a few years ago and picked up Dungeon Fun from him. Oh, no, I didn't buy it from him there. I waited until I was home and bought it online. But just to try and... Because I'm a comics fan, I'm desperate for my son to be a comics fan and keep forcing comics on him, whether he likes it or not. And Dungeon Fun was the one that he really responded well to. He got it straight away. He found all he laughed at all the right bits. Sometimes with like Batman comics, he doesn't get what's going on, whereas Dungeon Fun is really plain and he got it straight away. So it's just a really well told, funny all ages comic.
Right.
I think the reason it works so well, because I was thinking about why he'd responded to that instead of some of the other stuff, and I think it's because the motivations of all the characters are so clear, like, and they're simple, but they're not cliche. So, like, Fun Mudlift, the main character, is a little girl who lives at the bottom of a moat, and her only motivation is to go and tell off the people who keep throwing things in the moat.
I know. Do you know what? I know where she's coming from. That's what I feel like every week.
People throwing things in your moat.
But all the characters, there's like running jokes throughout. There's only four issues, and at the end of the last one, it teases a new series, but I don't know what the news is on that. It's really funny, really easy to read, it's really poignant at the end as well. A lot of people who've read it have said like the last few panels sort of like got them in a way that they didn't expect to from a kid's comic. It's really sad, but really uplifting at the same time. So, yeah, anybody who hasn't read it, I definitely recommend reading it.
Oh, okay. I haven't had a chance to check this one out yet.
Yeah, I'll have to check this one out.
Yeah, lots of people read this, didn't they?
So, Gareth, how did your child respond to Crossed when you were introduced Crossed to them? Were they not up for that?
The only bit I've read of is that where there's a man having sex with a dolphin.
Yep.
Oh,
is that it? That's the only bit
that's
I've seen.
That's the one, isn't it? Yeah.
Someone gets beaten to death with a horse penis.
Yeah.
isn't he called Horsecock or something? Isn't that the name of the character?
But do you know what? That bit of information I just told you is as much as I know about it.
Okay. It started off well.
That's an all-ages book, isn't it, Crossed? Yeah. Dungeon Fun. Yeah, I think we all need to. Apart from Tony, because you don't like anything all-ages. You don't like fun, do you?
I don't like kids.
But he does like dungeons.
Yeah.
But that's another story. I think there's some great picks there this week. But
yep,
let's shine the light now onto Gareth again. He was worried about his pick of the week. How does he feel now that I'm about to ask him the big question that I ask all our guests? The intercostal.
Yeah.
That was almost like the noise we made when Man versus Rock, just before we started recording, said, "I'm going to do all this in roll." We all went, "Okay." Like that.
The intercostal, the abstract surreal comic book that's on Kickstarter at the moment that we'll get into. But the intercostal, pitch it to us.
Right, so the intercostal is an abstract comics project, I'd say, rather than a single comic. That's as best I can describe it. Because there's no like single point where it all converges. It's just a progression of project after project. They all look kind of similar, but they're all doing different things.
Okay.
But the most recent one, the one that's been kickstarted, is called 683. And it's a really intentional homage to comics like 2000 AD and Overkill, sort of the stuff that got me into comics as a kid.
Mm.
Those anthology comics. We had five parts of different stories. So what I've done with that is I've put together a 32-page comic with five different bits in, and the style of it changes five times. So although it looks like it's been done by the same person, hopefully, it looks differently. It looks like different stories you go through. There's a different mood and a different pace to each of them, even though there's no narrative. So there's no underpinning narrative. There's no characters. There's no locations. It's just shapes and form and line, I guess.
So it kind of goes beyond, because it isn't a storybook. Do you know what I mean? For all those people listening.
Yeah, it depends. Like, when I sent it out to reviews, I just sent it out like blindly in case anybody might read it and get something from it. And what's been really nice is that the people who've flicked through it have read it a few times and got different things from it. So it's not just it's not just a book of pictures where you like judge each one at a time. People read a page after another, a panel after another, and get a sense of movement through it. And that's how it's a comic rather than a an art book, I guess.
Yeah,
because
there's a sequential nature to it, though, isn't there? There's a flow to the images for me.
Yeah, definitely, and that's definitely something that I've tried to put in there just while I've been doing this, like while I've been on the intercostal, I'm like constantly asking myself, like, how is this a comic? So when I'm talking to comics people, and I'm talking about their comic where they've got a character moving through a plot, how to relate that back to what I'm doing. And it's genuinely difficult. But I recently, do you know Simon Russell? I think you know him,
yes.
Tony.
I know him, yeah. I've met him, he's a good guy, yeah.
Yeah. We got in contact because Dave Crane he just wanted to know if people who make like weird comics on the table together, the Lakes. So. Right. Me and Simon and Alan Haverholm were like, yeah, we'll join up. And then from there, I got to know Simon a bit better. And he just put together this newspaper-sized thing called Question Marks. I don't know if...
I've seen it. It's really good. There's an interview with you in it, isn't there?
Yeah. And he asked really, really challenging questions. So...
Right. Don't worry about that. We won't do that here. Don't worry about
that. It wasn't... like 10 questions, I think, and it took me a week to answer them in a way that I was happy with. And a few times I just had to say, I don't know what I'm doing. So, there's a few other people do abstract comics. I'm certainly not the only person that does it. But everyone sort of works in isolation. And there's some pretty bold claims made by people about what they're doing about deconstructing the language of comics or taking entire genre and like revitalizing it. I'm not saying that they're not doing that, but I'm saying that maybe sometimes they're taking it too far. That comics isn't a dead medium or genre.
It's not broken, is it?
No, not at all. And so, I mean, the intercostal is just like, because I love comics, So although in one sense I'm an abstract artist rather than someone who makes comics, because I love comics so much, I try to, that's my medium. So like one abstract artist might do a 100-page canvas, 100-foot canvas, and I do a 32-page comic. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm really always really aware that I come across as really pretentious and like awful.
No, not at all. No, not at all. I understand completely, yeah. Yeah. Was it important to do, so rather than doing that canvas, you wanted to show a sense of sort of movement by doing it as a comic? Is that...
Because the way I started making it by accident, and I feel like I've told this story 100 times, but since you're the only people I've talked to on anything like this before, probably haven't. But I started it by accident because I was really into mail art a few years ago. And like you just send postcards to random people you never met and get something cool back. And I'd run out of postcards. So I just drew a box at the bottom of a page and was going to cut that out. And then when I looked at the page, I was like, oh, that looks like the panel of a comic. And then just filled out the rest of the page to match that. And that first one I did, I thought there was definitely a story going on. Like, I'd intentionally hidden the story and all the lines and everything going on. And it was still really horrendously pretentious. Like, I'd made up a whole language and stuff, these characters are talking. And then just started just making pages after that, without really any conscious thought of what I was doing. And I was really influenced by music at the time as well. So there's a band called Subtle, who aren't around anymore. But they'd done like three albums where it was a narrative, but the narrative was all happening at once. So it was like it starts and ends. The start is the end, and then the middle is and that was what I was going for. I was trying to tell a story where everything's happening at once. And then gradually, I forgot that I was doing that, and just carried on making pages that looked interesting. And then just started playing around with different ways of making it. So for a while, I was like using catalogs. Like, I've got one comic called Collider, and half of it is like traditional, like normal looking comic pages that I've drawn. And the other side is, the other half of the spread is an IKEA catalog, which I've put frames on and put words on. And I just started making, and I started taking catalogs and putting packing labels on those and then drawing on those to sort of break how it looked. And then after that, for a while, I thought, right, it's time to get serious. Let's make something cohesive. And then spent another 3 years just messing about. But it took so long, and I had other things going on while I was doing all this. So I've had a full time job the whole time I'm doing this, and I was also trying to like be a fashion illustrator. I was doing other little art projects. So there's lots of stuff going on. Like at one point, I'd done like the traditional intercostal pages. I was invited by friends of mine to be in a gallery. So I thought, right, I'll put everything up on the wall that I've done so far, and thought it wasn't enough. So I made a massive papier-mâché Batman costume and nailed that.
As you do. Yeah.
And like nailed that to the wall, the idea that people would stand inside it. I don't think anybody did. I think people thought it was a bit weird, to be honest. and it's just like...
Was it crotchless?
Sorry? No, it wasn't an entire costume. It's just like the cape, and there's a couple of fists that you could like... They were just cardboard boxes painted to look like Batman's fists. You could like hold like gloves. And it's still one of the things I'm proudest of, but it started to really stink, so I had to throw it away. So I decided to like get more serious, and also because the whole time I've been doing this, all the pages I've been doing were different sizes, or I hadn't thought about how they'd scan or print or anything like that. I was just making them, scanning them, putting them online and moving on to the next page without any thought. So then when I decided to do everything the same size, and the way I did that was, again, at LSCC, I went to a Top Cow. I'd done a talk, and David Hine was on there. And just as he was leaving, gave me like one of their flyers. I thought, oh, I'll just use that as a template. So I was just drawing around that and then filling that in with a comic each time. And it's only after I'd done 20 odd of those I realised that was a really non-standard size. I couldn't, yeah. So it was just like constant accidents. But halfway through doing that period, which I ended up calling it the intercostal 2, because it wasn't the same as the intercostal I'd started off, but it was still a continuation. And about halfway through that, I came up with this idea, which isn't original at all, of taking an existing comics page, which I really admired, and like breaking that in a way that showed how much I liked it. So I did a few of those, like Sean Phillips pages from, and it's usually like weird comics which people don't remember. So there's a short that Sean Phillips and John Smith did in Crisis, which I was made aware of through somebody else's blog. And I did a few pages of that, and it was nearly all John Smith stuff, actually, from 2000 AD. Tyranny Rex, and what else did I do? Oh, I did some Steve Ditko Spider-Man ones. So when I finally finished it, and I printed that recently, earlier this year, just to sort of get an idea of whether people would want to buy one of my comics. So I mixed them all up. So there's some pages in, like, I sold it over Big Cartel. There's some pages in there which were like all my work, and some pages which were these, I call it stealing, and I've got a blog post in which I justify it. So it's just like coming up with different ways of doing it.
I would imagine, though, like when you say you break it, and like I doubt that these art pages that you're drawing influence from, when you finished with it, looks vastly different to, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than being someone who's, you know, just redrawing it in a different way or a different medium, you're completely just deconstructing each line, I would presume, and shape and.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's one page which I've done which looks, because it was my favourite page, my favourite comic. So Revere, which was in 2000 AD by John Smith and Simon Harrison. And it's a really weird comic, and you either love it or you despise it.
Right.
And I just really, really love it. But my favourite page from that was the main character at the end of the second chapter just jumps off the top of a car park after a butterfly. And that's it. Like, it's him, like, just jumping. But when I tried to break that, I was so in love with it that it just looked like the same page. So people who are familiar with that were reading. Like Tom Whiteley, somebody who's really helped me out recently, he was reading through the intercostal 2 and came to that page and was like, it's ruined it, because I know what this page is and what the context is, and it stopped me being able to enjoy the rest of the comic, or not the rest of the comic, but that page in particular sort of broke him out. But yeah, most of the time that doesn't happen. I'm quite careful about making sure that it doesn't look like it used to.
Interesting. Yeah. You've been doing this for a long time then, Gareth. It's sort of,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first page I did, the accidental one, was in 2008, I think.
Right.
So that's how long I've just been. And it's always, I've just been doing a few pages here and there. And I tend to do them in bursts as well. I'll do 6 pages in a couple of weeks and then not doing, and then I'd go for a month and not think about it. But, I mean, part of the copy and pages thing became, like, when you go to a comic convention and you'll take some comics, so you can go and meet somebody you really admire and say, oh, look, I've got these comics, can you sign them? And that's a way of starting a conversation. Something triggered in my head that's like, if I go to a comics creator and show that I've broken one of their pages, they're going to really appreciate it. and it's sometimes it really worked, and some people respond really well to it. David Hine was probably one of the first people I showed it to, and he sort of got it straight away. He found it quite interesting, and some people just Peter Milligan I was just sort of bothered him, and he didn't really want to talk to me, but I carried on anyway, and I was showing him, and he got it, but he didn't, I suppose, because he lived through the experimental side of the 80s, he's probably seen it similar things a few times before. That was one of my motivations for a while, just like showing off.
But you're not afraid to take someone's work and then, like, it's not like you're doing it and then never showing them. You actively want to seek out these artists and sort of say, here's what I did to your work. Yeah.
Yeah, got to say how for that. I would, yeah. I guess you never know what they're going to do to you or say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's nerve-wracking. Like, and one thing I learned quickly is never take your children to a signing where you want a conversation with the person. Because I met McMahon? Dreadized.
Yeah.
And I had my son there, and my son had been in line for half an hour, and he just did not care that I wanted to have a conversation. He's like, "Yeah, can we go now? Just let's go." So,
No.
So is the new book? Sorry, Gareth. Is the new book a lot a complete extrapolation of what you were doing there? Is that how would you see it as that or?
yes, it is. So a lot of the lessons I learned from there's only so much you can say about what I've done. It's sort of an open secret what I've done, but now that I'm kickstarting it, it's a proper secret. So
right, okay.
the year it's taken to do this, I started it last March. And in that year, I've been like, I've done this page, and this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do this entire comic. And then I contacted the publishers of what I was doing and said, because in the meantime, while I've been doing this, I was invited out to Germany, because they'd seen that I was like stealing comic pages and making them abstract. So I was invited to be part of a gallery show out there. So I contacted this particular publisher and said, I want to do a series of pages based on your comics. Is that okay? And went, it's for gallery, that's fine, don't worry about it, just pretend that we're not involved, just like don't make anyone think that this is our thing that you're doing. I was like, fine. So and then I contacted them again just before the Kickstarter and said, oh, just to check, this is fine, isn't it? It's not a problem, I'm putting on Kickstarter. You said it was all right before, and they're like, actually no, you can't tell anybody.
Right.
Okay. Which is fine, I get it's their IP. So I think there's going to be quite a few people listening now who know exactly what I'm talking about. I've been stressing out about it so much as well. Like, can I claim this is all my own work? And then the people have asked, I'm like, it doesn't look anything like it used to. So you're all right. Stop stressing out. So I'll tell you off air what
I've... Okay. Right.
We had no idea. I can honestly tell you, because we talked about this, the review copy a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I never would have had any idea.
No, and it was when you all said nice things about it that I was like, oh, God, I'm a fraud. What am I doing?
That's the English guilt.
And then, a few other people wrote nice things about it. And I was like, oh, no, and it found out. When they find out what I've done, I'm going to get taken to comics trial and publicly shamed. I'll be the next Frank Cho.
Cool article.
It is on the one hand, because I wanted to say, like, I've done this because this is how much I love this particular comic, and I wanted to honor the people that made that. But what's interesting is that one of the pieces of feedback I've got, again from Tom, who's familiar with what I've done, was that knowing the stories that I was retelling made my telling of it difficult to get into, whereas people who had no idea what the originals looked like, like you said, you sort of like get into it and you're not broken out by it, because what I've done is quite academic, I guess, to a certain extent. While academic can be quite interesting, it's also really boring if you're overthinking it. So to read it through as like a visceral sort of emotional thing was, I was really glad of that happening. And that's why I've been really aware since then. I do my own stuff. I'm not just constantly stealing. You wouldn't know. It feels like
sometimes you take other, like you've done, it's other people's work and you rework it so much that essentially it's not what it was before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No,
it's completely different now.
Yeah, it's not the original art, and it doesn't look anything like it, and I've made it entirely differently. The only thing that's the same is the size of the panels and the number of pages. Everything else is different. And I've, like, but what it's meant is that I've got really, you spend a lot of time looking at other artists' work and really appreciating it. And then you sort of notice, like, little things they do, which you wouldn't, as a comics reader, you, like, notice nice art, but you don't necessarily notice how someone's bounced out black and white on the page. You don't think about that stuff. So it's quite nice, and that's given me an appreciation now when I read comics. Sometimes, like, Sam reading Sienkiewicz page, I, like, stop reading the words because I'm like, oh, yeah, I like how he's done that, and he's made it really effortless. And it, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't gone through those processes, I guess.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
So, yeah, but, yeah, go on.
You mentioned cons earlier.
Yeah.
Fancy. Obviously, we met you at London Super Comic Con. Yeah. How did you kind of get, how did you find out about doing that? Because...
It's because, so John, who runs it, his sister, Vass, I worked with, and she knew I was a bit of a geek, and said, oh, like, we're desperate for volunteers, do you want to volunteer? And the first year I couldn't do it for one reason or another. And the year after that, I was like, yeah, definitely, I'll definitely come down and help. And what's in, what's sort of interesting was that at the time, I hadn't been reading, so I think loads of people go through this, where they stop reading comics about, I don't know, 18 or 19, because they got other things to worry about, like booze and cigarettes and women. And then and then once they've had enough of that, they go, oh, I really love comics, I've got to get it. So a volunteer in that first year at LSCC was like when I've sort of like really ramped up my addiction to comics. And yeah, so that's how I did it. And the first year, nobody knew me there, so I sort of wandered around with no real jobs to do. But because I ended up just chatting to people about, and then so some of the organisers saw that I knew what I was talking about. Because even though I'd been out of comics for a while, I still was into it.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing, like, because I've always been a massive fan of Chris Weston.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Indigo Prime Killing Time, even that was the when I got back into comics, that's the first thing I like, raced back to find and trade. And so getting to meet him, I was like, oh wow, this is so this is what like Comic Cons are. Because up until then, I didn't really have any clue, I didn't know what was going on. Our interest, like, yeah, so I volunteered for a place called Ministry of Stories, and my first day there, I met David O'Connell, who does comics and children's books. And I told him that I was working on Intercostal, and this is a few years ago. And he's like, oh, do you go to cons? And I was like, oh, no, 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 that's not for me. And he looked so disappointed. He looked so disappointed in me. I was like, oh, maybe I should, like, answer that differently next time. So, yeah, so I did the first year at LSCC, and then after that I was invited to work on Artist Alley and sort of, like, be a bit, because I could talk to creators, sort of like I knew who they were, which a lot of the time, like a lot of the volunteers there, like are just they're friends of the organisers. So they're not into comics at all. They're just there to
cosplayers
or just like have a nice weekend. Whereas I'm just there to like properly geek out and just bother because I just like really I don't know I've not heard it mentioned before, but I really like queues at comic conventions. So, like, being in the queue. Like, sometimes I've got to just...
You talk to other fans.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And I've made some, like, really good... I went to 2008 signing at Forbidden Planet a little while ago. I met a guy, John, there. And just from that, we worked on a comic together because we'd been talking in the queue.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, like, being in charge of Artist Alley, just sort of walk around, chat into the queue and make sure they're happy. I mean, a lot of the time it's really boring because, especially now that it's quite well organised and that they've planned it out so that queue sizes don't get too stupid.
Yeah.
You don't. I just sort of walk up and down waiting for people to ask me questions. And usually the questions they ask, I haven't got answers to anyway.
I have to say, I feel your pain around the volunteering thing. I volunteered for Comica a few years in a row.
Yeah.
And I'd go along and I'd be, you know, chatting to other volunteers about, oh, such and such a guest and, oh, I'm really excited about his new comic. And they were just sort of staring at me blankly.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what was going on about. And I think some of them were just there because they thought it was a cool thing to go and volunteer for, you know, indie sort of press titles
and
stuff.
Weird. Yeah, why would you want to volunteer for something you wouldn't enjoy?
I know, yeah. And then I ended up just sort of chatting to all the creators and, you know, sitting down and bending their ear. And there was almost like a little bit of a jealous look across the room at me. And I'm thinking, well, you've had this chance, you know.
Yeah.
one sort of standing and huddling and not putting chairs out. I put all the chairs out. I'm going to get to chat to this bloke, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, strange sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, and it does, like, give me a chance to, like, it means that I don't have to do that thing with getting a comic signed to talk to someone I admire. I can just go up and talk to them. Which, yeah, it does help, because there's only so many comics I can get signed, to be honest.
So many things on their desk you actually want to buy. You know, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst thing. Wandering around just going, oh, I wish I didn't only have, like, 30 quid this month, because I buy something from every table here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you get a chance to speak to kind of the big names, so to speak, at London Super Comic Con before they kind of did their tables or whatever? Was it all kind of a bit too kind of fast?
A lot of it is really busy. Some people recognise you. Like, Howard Chaykin's one of the best for that. Every year he'll see people he knows and, like, ask them how they are. He doesn't stop talking anyway. He'll literally talk to anybody.
Were you there when Stan did it? Were you there the first year?
No, that was the first year. That's the one I missed.
So you were there when Roy Thomas did it the second year, was it? Yeah.
Possibly. What was the second year?
Thomas, definitely. And then they did the Daredevil panel, didn't they? They had, there was sort of a Daredevil celebration, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. Trying to think.
Who else have you, put it this way, who else have you enjoyed speaking to then? You know,
Sean Phillips was good to chat to.
I spoke to him today, actually. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, really nice.
Robin Firth, because do you know Robin Firth? She writes The Dark Tower for Marvel. She writes with Peter David.
Okay. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know that she was writing comics. I knew that she'd done, like, the companion to The Dark Tower, and she was so easy to talk to and really nice, and I got on really well with her. David Hine, I keep mentioning David Hine, but yeah, he's been really good to talk to. And weird, like, Simon Davis hasn't signed there or anything, but every year he just comes and has a walk around, because I met him the first year I was there and, like, got him to the 2000 AD booth. Like, every year we just sort of see each other and I go, oh, how's Slane going? Oh, yeah, it's going really well. What's going on with you? Oh, not much. All right, see you later. But that exchange happens every year now.
You cherish those moments, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you had to speak to us. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Who else was really good to speak to? Tom Palmer was really nice.
Okay. Yeah.
But he just, yeah, he, like, took my name down as, like, one of the nicest people he's ever met to, just because I stopped someone from interrupting his sandwich. he was
that's
just
sort of thing
desperately
Vince
trying to get some lunch, and people were coming up going, can you sign this? Can you sign this? He's like, oh, can I just get through my sandwich? So I just walked up and was like, just give him 5 minutes. And
anyone
this is amazing. This is the first time anybody's been this nice to me.
Yeah, anyone out there that's had a convention table will know this. As soon as you start eating, people come to the table. You could be dead silent all day. The moment you stop for lunch, someone will come up.
You get your Gruffalo pack lunchbox out.
There's nothing wrong with that pack lunch. Don't hate the player, hate the game. Jesus.
To be fair, that did happen a number of times. I remember, like, having a drink or eating it.
You two had got yourself cups of tea, didn't you? I didn't get one. And then people came over.
Good thing you let that go.
He's never going to let that go, Dan.
I walk over. You two all right for a drink? Yeah, we're right, actually. We've got a cup of tea. Oh, brilliant.
I can't even remember how that came about.
Well, I'll tell you why, Dan. Tony would go off wandering for, like, hours, and we wouldn't know where he was. Oh, Gareth's witnessing the first on-air domestic. No, I must say, though, like, you know, in terms of, you know, big shout out to all the people that help at conventions and stuff. I mean,
you were
a massive help.
Especially shout out to Paul, because he was the person actually taking care of your alley. And he was like me. He'd sort of fallen out of comics for a while. And he's so into London Super Comic Con now. I only see him, like, for that weekend every year. But he's always so excited. Like, he gets sweets to give out to everybody.
Oh, yeah, Paul, good man.
Absolutely.
And I walked down. Sorry, go on.
Is it definitely running next year?
As far as I know, I haven't been told otherwise. I usually get an email about 2 months before saying you're definitely going to volunteer. Okay. You're not on holiday or anything. It's fine. But no, Paul really gets into it. And whereas I just make sure like my cues are all right, maybe chat to people in between. He walks up and he's like constantly telling people how they should be selling themselves, how they should present themselves. And he's like, look, and he's actually sending people over to you to get more exposure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and he gets really into it. So he's probably like the best volunteer, I reckon.
Don't do yourself down, Gareth.
I'm the second best volunteer.
It's interesting, like, to see whether the cons next year will take a approach to the fan art thing that we keep on kind of reading about, talking about, etc.
Yeah.
Sort of, I mean, that'd be putting for you in a very difficult position. Say they say, right, you got to go over to table B12, whatever, and say you got to take that fan art down. Or
yeah. I don't know how they police it, because obviously everyone gets vetted before.
How does the vetting procedure
work?
I think it's just the organisers like going through those people websites.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what they do.
I know, for instance, like MCM, apparently they had like, you know, they do sort of lay it out in the emails beforehand, but that won't stop some people. Do you know what I mean? It's a numbers game. You know, some people still chance around that. What would you do, Gareth, if someone said you need to go and shut this shit down? Table B12, Tony Esmond is absolutely taking the piss. Yeah. What would you say to him?
First of all, I'd warn the table on either side that something's going to happen. Fire extinguisher or something, and just like lay in.
Yeah. Just do me straight away. Just go straight in.
That flying clothesline over the table.
Hit me with a folded chair.
Yeah. I suppose if I was just be sly about it, just go and get loads of cosplayers to stand in front of their table.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right, then. Yeah, we can't drive home.
It's weird because we were handed some dubious material at London Super Comic Con. So presumably you kind of like, you check, but you can only check so much and you might see a certain amount and then it's like, holy fuck.
It's like, because what happened this year was that Sam Reed and Colin Bell had a table. And like, for one, I don't know why, but they couldn't get it. So Sam contacted me the day before and said, can we swap in for Chris Welsh and Tom Ward? And I was like, well, I know them because I've just literally just backed Doc Dino, so I know who they are. It'll probably be fine, don't worry about it, I'll sort it. And I went and saw John, the organizer. I was like, oh, John, by the way, this table's that they're not going to be here, but somebody else is coming instead. He's like, what are you talking about? I've got no idea who they are. They could be bringing in like loads of hentai and I have no idea. So it's something that they're, and like, so I was like, look, if they've got loads of like porn comics, that's my fault. I'll take the burden.
To be fair, I remember at MCM a couple of years ago, I made a complaint about a hentai stall and they threw him out.
Oh, right. Fair play.
And one of the guys said to me, that's the second time we've warned them about that this weekend. Yeah. And they closed them down and they were all the way over from the States.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that's good. You know what I mean?
That's really good.
Yeah. There's a delicate balance, I think, because there are some people who's like, they just do cheesecake pictures of superheroes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's their bread and butter. So whether there's a line where the line is.
This was dubious ages, sexual content. Right. You know, that sort of thing. And but they weren't covered either. They were sort of on display behind them.
Yeah.
And I'd say, look, what's this all about, mate? And he said, and he just walked off. So I thought, I'll make a complaint about it. And they threw it out. I was quite pleased. Yeah. Yeah. You see less and less hentai now at conventions and stuff. It used to be a bit of a thing for a while, wasn't it? But
I think
I've seen it for a while.
Yeah, it's like a few years ago, porn was cool in art, and then fell out of coolness again. So it's probably similar.
Yeah.
We just got to hang around for the resurgence again.
Well, it seems how Vince is hogging the wolf porn comic.
No, I'm not. dear God. Yeah. Oh. Anyway, back to art.
Yeah.
Proper art, not that filth. You do a lot of abstract stuff. I mean, what... Do you follow like the art scene as well? You know, obviously you're a big
geek. I still got friends who are artists and follow it that way. But because for a while that's where I thought I was. I thought I was an artist and I was just making this comic on the side. because they used to make a big abstract drawing, so a similar style, but they were for display. And just because of like moving and space, the drawings got smaller and smaller and smaller. And then like this love of comics kicked in, so I stopped being part of that. So like I used to go and flick through Art Review and just go, oh, Jesus Christ, these people are getting paid millions for like just like upending a bucket of plaster in a gallery. So yeah, I've got friends there. And I still think that what I do is like, I still do art projects. Like recently, Keck W, who writes for 2000 AD.
Yeah.
He does weird little noise art things, and had done a project and was like, I need someone to pick this up. So I was like, oh, I'll do it. And ended up recording a bench at work every day for a month, and then like layering that. And again, that was like an art project rather than a comics project.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not. Yeah. I definitely feel more part of the comics thing. Because even when I was a fashion illustrator and I had friends who are fashion illustrators, comics are the first time I've really felt like I'm part of a community.
Interesting. Yeah. Because there's a lot of different areas. Sorry,
yeah.
There's a lot of different areas of comics, especially in London. You know, you've got like the more sort of LCAF type scene.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the more sort of MCM, or you've got like London Super Comic Con. There's all different areas. I can see Intercoastal going down at the mall almost, you know? Are you aware of all that?
Because like LSCC, because like obviously that's mainstream comics. Like people are only really interested in the big two and maybe a bit of Image. And I know that like my audience wouldn't be there. So I've been involved in the Windows trailer, the Lakes Comic Art Festival. And that was just like taking a punt. Like, oh, because what I'd applied to be part of the 24-hour comic. Again, like, not having no idea whether I'd get in. I was just like, I'll apply and see what happens. And the result of that, they've got, that's the, like the Eisner Dan, what's his name? 24/7, like Warwick Cadwell, what's his face? You know what I mean?
Oh, I know him,
So the anthology they got off the back of that is Eisner nominated, and that was the year that I didn't get in.
Right.
Which, it's probably good for them, actually. But yeah, but what I did for them, I did an intercourse version of like Wainwright Lake Guides. So I did three big gallery size comics for that, and they went down really, really well. And part of it was because it's Wainwright and it's the Lakes, and that's what they're into. And part of it just because the audience is more receptive to something a bit different. And again, I did again last year, and I'm doing it this year as well as tabling. So it's just only now that I've started to get serious about setting up conventions, because I go to them. Like I've been to LCAF and had a pootle around and gone, oh yeah, this is sort of like, this is more where I fit in. So I'm at Thought Bubble this year again. But I just thought I'll never get a table at Thought Bubble. I applied 2 years ago, they weren't interested, but it's the last day, I'll just like send it off.
I remember when you emailed us about it, and you were very that English guilt kicked in again. You know, you felt bad about being accepted into Thought Bubble, but you know, obviously it's sad that a lot of people didn't get in.
Yeah,
but if fresh new faces like your good self can get in, then it's great for the people going to Thought Bubble at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I just got Kickstarter funds, I can print it.
That's true. Are you going to get a banner and things like that?
I don't know.
You should. We can tell you where to get one. We'll tell you that after.
Yeah, very cheap. Yeah.
All right.
But I think it is an essential, something that is essential for a con table, especially these days, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't need to get one, but I, you know, personally, I just think it looks a bit more striking.
Or if you even had your kind of name and stuff on it,
at
the Bemmer, just to kind of let you know people where you are.
Exactly. You walk into a show thinking, I want to see this person. If it's not necessarily, you know, clear somewhere, you know, you could walk around a convention all day, and you know, sometimes you don't really want to stare at people at their tables. You just want to look up and see a name and know exactly where you're going.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
Although, and you can't see over the heads of people sometimes, you know, so
yeah.
having that there.
The other side of that is that at LSCC, like when everyone's setting up or pack, like left at the end of the day, there is a bit where like two or three volunteers have to run around picking up everyone's banners because they've all fallen over in the wind. So there, there's two sites. So I was like, I don't want to have to put someone through like reassembling my banner. but yeah, I'll probably leave it until the last minute, get desperate, and then just like hand make something that falls apart on the way.
Oh, that's small press through and through, isn't it? Brilliant. So for more people, if people want to know more about the Intercoastal, because I mean, if you ask any one of us, you have to see it to believe it. To know what we're talking about,
yeah.
It really is in terms of comics being a visual medium, you know, this is, there's none more so visual than this.
Yeah.
So
people ask me at work, like, what comic do you do? And I go, oh, I sort of just like do like swirly lines, and it makes a comic. And they're like, yeah, all right. I just walk off. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I think it, because you've seen 683 as a PDF, and I think it'll make much more sense once it's printed out, it's like an object to flick through. I think it'll like all fall in then. That's what I'm hoping anyway. Otherwise, I'm screwed.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, yeah. So if you want
to find out more, sorry.
Yeah.
You can either go to intercoastal.com, because I set up a website just to like, and it sort of covers all the projects actually, and it's got most of the pages I've done except for 683 available to have a look at there. Or my sort of more illustration website is girthink.com, which is girthink.com.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, so there's a lot of silence there. I've just been
hanging in. Yeah. What's the next event people can see you at?
The next event is, I think it's the Lakes. So I'm tabling with Dave Crane and Simon Russell at the Lakes.
Yeah.
And I'll be there, and then after that it'll be Thought Bubble, and until then I'll be desperately trying to get stuff made and printed so I've got something to sell at them.
Nice. Cool.
In fact, Simon's message just today, if you look at the Awesome Comics stream, he's sent his message today.
Oh, okay, thank you, Simon.
Yeah.
We've got the best people. Anyway, speaking of events, what have we got coming up then, Tony?
Right, there's a few. Next weekend, 10th to the 12th, so Friday to Sunday of June, is the 5th East London Comics Art Festival, LCAF. It's at the Round Chapel, 1 Glen Arm Road, East London. If you go to www.elcaf.co.uk for tickets, artist in residence is Jean Julien, who will be exhibiting there, as well as sort of numerous guests and exhibitors. There's a lot of sort of past people we've had on the show, some great people there. Along with that is Adrian Tamine, who is just brilliant. I'm a big fan of Adrian's work. I was only looking at some today. Also there will be Julia Scheel, Andy Poyargi, Gareth Brooks, Simon Morton, Avery Hill, many, many more. On the 10th, the same day, is Natasha Bustos. It will be signing Chernobyl, which is a book that we raved about, and I think deservedly so. And that's at 5:30 p.m. at Orbital Comics, 8 Great Newport Street in London. On the 19th to the 6th is the 3rd Crouch End Comics Art Festival, and that's at 11 a.m. at the Earl Haig Hall, 18 Elder Avenue, North 8, 90H. And it will be Breakdown Press, so we talked about their bosoms, or we will do in a minute. Claude TT. One Beat Designs, flawless with my presentation. Paul Rainey, Roger Langridge, Tiny Pencil, Avery Hill, many, many more. At the 25th of June is Cardiff Independent Comics Expo.
Yay.
Between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m., which I think you're at, aren't you, Vince?
I am.
Nice one.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Also, as well as the Mighty Vince, will be John Higgins, Al Ewing, David Roach, God Machine, Hellbound Media, John Scrivens, Gav Mitchell, Emily Owen, Sean Jefferson, Milmo, I think, is going, Time Bomb Comics, many, many more. That's at the Cardiff Masonic Hall, which is where Dan goes at the weekends. tickets are only a fiver, which is good. And
have you seen Dan's special handshake?
I've seen his nipple.
Yeah, the one nipple.
When he bared it, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't really. That's the only one you've got, isn't it, Dan?
He's like Scaramanga, he's got three.
The other one was bitten off by a dog.
I'm fucking saying nothing around that.
James Gibbs, you know what to do.
Yeah, Gibbs, does sharpen that pencil, my friend. So the 9th of July is Small Press Day. So if you've got any events for that, please send them in and we will publicise them. That's it for events.
Nice. What about the shout-outs? Who do we want to give a little shout-out to?
I've got a shout-out.
You go,
Comic House, the new British monthly comic book anthology, is now on Kickstarter. It's a 44-page British comic book anthology featuring a whole bunch of indie creators from around the world, and covers by like established big name comic book creators. So I think they're about to release the person who's done the first cover this week, so I won't kind of trump them on that. It's on Kickstarter. It's got 25 days to go from the time you're listening to this. And in the first issue, you got some familiar names. You've got James McCulloch, Jessica Bryan, Dave Cook, Norrie Miller, John Late, some wanker called Dan Butcher, Ed Bickford, Aaron Walter, Luke Cooper, Tom Ward, and Ian Laurie. I've seen most of the work that's going into this. It's really good. They really kind of set a benchmark out and trying to get a really high quality of writing and art in this. And I think it's going to be really special.
Very nice one, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So
cool.
Go check that out.
I've got two issues coming out. Avery Hill very kindly sent us preview copies of two books which are launching at LCAF. Please go down and get them. They're both really good. Metroland issue 3 from Ricky Miller and Julia Scheel, which I absolutely love. I think it's such a great series. So different, so well done. A real sort of strange vibe to it, which is really interesting. And the second release is Internal Wilderness from Claire Scully. A very strange book. I'm going to do a bit of a deeper dive on probably both these books in the upcoming weeks. But yeah, really good. Go down to LCAF, get yourself a copy. There you go.
Lovely.
That sounds me.
I just want to give a shout out to the guys that are behind The Grime issue 2 and their successful Kickstarter. Well done, lads. I know Kickstarters are a squeaky bum moment for a lot of people involved. this particular issue, I'm actually participating in, so it was nice to know that it's going to be printed. So, brilliant. So that's
nice
good.
Work.
So, and speaking of shout-outs, let's get on with our good friends who love the superhero genre and everything about it. Yes, A Place to Hang Your Cape is the site for you. If you like superhero TV shows, there's not many about, is there? I don't think there's any. No. There's no superhero stuff about these days, is there? I can't think of it.
No, I'm not heard of anything.
No. Such a niche genre, isn't it, really? But if you do like that stuff, if you've managed to find a TV show about superheroes, then there's a good chance that A Place to Hang Your Cape has talked about it. They've reviewed it. They've got interviews with creators, essays about the superhero genre. They've got loads of stuff on there. They're a great group of people as well. And they're always nice to us whenever we see them. And so check out the site at AP2HYC. And if you like to read your books digitally, then go to pipedreamcomics.co.uk. They do reviews, they previews, they focus on a lot of small press stuff. They look at Comixology Submit and all the goodies there that I normally sort of plunder every Wednesday. And so pipedreamcomics.co.uk, and it will have a side order of shout out. Congratulations to Alex from Pipe Dream and the birth of his new addition to the
family. Yeah, nice one, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you mean, nice one? Like, you know, well done. You know.
Yeah.
You sound surprised.
No, you know.
Yeah, but a big pat on the back from all of us here. So, yeah. And where would all of us here be without Down the Tubes?
Hey.
Down
big,
the Tubes.
Big shout out to John. He put on a great show this weekend, I've got to tell you. Yeah, really good.
Nice one.
Yeah, he put a lot of effort into him. You can see it was like a tiring day in like the hottest room in the world. But yeah, really good day it was. Yeah, very, very good.
The room I'm in could give that a run for its money.
Oh, could it?
It's like, fucking hell.
Everyone's so hot and sweaty. Is that what it is? Is that what this week is?
Hot and sweaty week.
Oh dear, but like Down the Tubes, we can't say enough about it. If you want to get your fix of UK comic book news and articles and where your local comic book shop is or your local event, go to downthetubes.net. Might as well say it now because Tony might not say it properly later, knowing him. He's a saucy little minx. So there you go. I've never called you a minx before, have I, Tony?
It's nice. I liked it. Yeah, it's nice.
Lovely. Won't be the last time.
I may be hallucinating because I've got some sunstroke. but it sounded nice.
Yeah. You're going to listen back, aren't you? You have no idea what you've said this week.
I don't know where I am now.
Oh, dear. If you find Tony Esmond, please call us on... No. There you go, folks. Anyway, on with the show. So, what recommendations have we got for the listeners this week, gents? Mr. Esmond the Third?
Is it me?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend... I've been a bit adult with my choices this week, haven't I?
Yeah.
It's probably the only choices. Way you've been adult this
week. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The second book I'm going to recommend is Generous Bosom, Part 1. I bet you thought I was joking when I said it was called that earlier, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah.
It's a big A4 graphic novel, if you want to call him that, by Connor Steckschult. 70 pages, mostly black and white, although he uses different colour combinations, you know, red and white, blue and white, stuff like that. It's published by Breakdown Press. And Part 1 is called A Dry Spell Ended. And yes, it does refer to that sort of dry spell.
Okay.
I think I probably need to warn you this is pretty heavily adult material, very realistic adult material. And you open the front cover, it's got like a sort of design to the inside cover, you know, which isn't part of the story. And it's just a big picture of a bra, which I thought that's cool.
You thought that was cool?
Yeah. Yeah, hate for bras. And then so it's about two old pals and they meet in a bar. So I think it's set in America. It's hard to tell, but it looks like America. They meet in a bar and they sort of wind each other up and joke at each other. And one of them tells the other about how he ended his sort of sexual dry spell. And it all happened on a rainy night, as all good horror stories do. And he gets a flat tire, but you realise the flat tire he gets is due to a bit of wood with nails nailed into it being placed on the road. So he gets a flat tire and because it's pouring rain, he manages to drop his phone into a puddle, so that's not working. So he walks to the nearest house, and he's sort of enthusiastically invited in by the owner, who immediately introduces his wife, who is called Cindy. And she's sort of fairly good looking lady, and she has, yes, a generous bosom. And it's sort of, he keeps looking at it, he sort of keeps glancing over at this generous bosom, and it's something that's noticed by the husband. And now this, so far, it makes it sound a bit like it's a porno, doesn't it, to be fair?
A little bit,
porno setup. You know, I like old school porno that had stories, and it, you know, I think it's sort of, I think it's going down that way, isn't it? You know, yeah, no one's got a story anymore, do they? Just straight at it. A bit boring, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so, I don't like porno, it's demeaning.
If you don't have to sort the tracking out on the tape, then it's not worth it, is it?
Yeah, when I paused Elena Eleniak coming out of that cake so many times in the scene. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. It's the Steven Seagal scenes that you like.
That's
I know
I
it.
Pause. Yeah.
Just pause. Slowing down to get his hand speed.
Yeah. Right, no more Seagal hating. You know, I love him. Anyway. Yes, but it's not. It's got like, it sounds like when I'm describing it there as a porno, but it's not. It's got like a real sort of sinister feel to it. It's more like the start of maybe a noir, you know, a thriller noir or a sort of horror movie. And there's a strange sort of feeling as it goes on, a strange dynamic between the husband and wife. And you get a sense almost straight away there's a sort of, well, a more than just a sexual sort of encounter going on. Turns out that Art, who is the husband in question, is a sort of depressive, and he's a little bit over friendly, and he's obviously a bit up and down. Is, you know, obviously taking meds and stuff like that. And the creator really plays with your sort of perceptions of what is going on, and he keeps sort of righting the ship. You think, oh, thank God, it's begun to get a bit normal, and it's not going down the road I think it's going down. And then he throws a sort of spanner in the works again. And it all goes a bit strange again. It pulls a sort of carpet away from you. So Art calls Glenn, who's the guy that's driving the car, who's lost his phone. He calls him onto the porch, and they have the chat. And the chat goes on, sort of talking heads pages, sort of 6 or 7 pages long. And he talks about how he's fucked his life over, and depression has sort of robbed him of his sort of soul almost. And then he drops it on Glenn's toes that his wife's upstairs and available. And but it doesn't. It's not like Glenn just goes, "Oh, I'll go upstairs then." It's sort of strange. It's sort of, he goes up there eventually, and he sits in the room with Cindy, and they talk for a long time. And she sort of explains the situation to him. And I won't tell you what happens, because I think it's worth buying and reading. But something happens, and it's kind of what you expect, but it's done in a very strange way. and he'd done in almost like overly realistic. I mean, most of my sexual encounters in my life have been pretty disastrous, and this one, you know what I mean?
Lights were off. Yeah.
Yeah, on my own. But this one is
goes wrong even then.
Yeah, even then I don't really enjoy it.
There's just a lot of mess to clean up, isn't there?
Oh no, it's the heat stroke, isn't it? It's doing it to me again.
Is that what you call it? But,
the deep heat stroke.
Yeah. Do you know Vic Burns? It does if you rub it on your cock. There you go. There's an old joke for you. Look at that. Oh, anyway, so it's not quite what you expect. It's done really well. I have to say, sinister, but almost like really sad as well, dark. And moments like extremely sexual. You know, if you're not into that, do not buy this book. But it's very interesting. I think there's a second volume out. It's the first time we've spoken about Breakdown Press, but they're quite a bunch of guys in London and girls who are creating books, and it's sort of imaginative and adventurous. They don't always work, but this one certainly worked for me. I bought it at Comica off the guys at their table there, and there's copies in Gosh. But if you can't get to Gosh or anywhere like that, go to breakdownpress.com or on Twitter there @breakdownpress and get yourself a copy of Generous Bosom Part 1.
Generous Bosom. Lovely.
There you go.
From Generous Bosom to Dan.
To Sleeping Dogs.
Oh.
Hey.
Sleeping Dogs by Cabal Comics. This is cracking. I really enjoyed this one.
Oh, right, 28 pages. Well, yeah.
Monty Nero talked about that.
Oh, did he?
It's really nice. Written by Fraser Campbell, art by Loretero Capristo. I stumbled through that name again. Colours by David B. Cooper and lettering and design by Colin Bell. I'll read you the synopsis. Mal Gillis is an ageing former bad boy struggling to make ends meet after turning his back on a life of violence and petty crime. He makes a living handing out flyers for a comic book store dressed as an off-brand superhero. He keeps his spirits up by helping vulnerable people living in the high-rise tower block that has been his home and patch all his life. He brings shopping to the elderly, makes sure the addicts are eating, babysits for people on shift work. He's trying to be good, but when Mal arrives home one night to find his son has been murdered by a nigh-untouchable local villain, he realises there's no hope for justice unless he gets it for himself. It's a really good comic. Really rate you get this one. Very kind of bleak, violent, kind of all the stuff we like on the show.
I read that this week as well, because Fraser's been really supportive of 683 and the Intercourser for a while. So, I bought a copy of him. And like the way it builds up, to that the last couple of pages, and especially that last panel, which won't spoil for it, it's just amazing. It's really, really clever.
Yeah, it's really, really well done. Kind of, it's like the culmination of events that come to the end. It's only 175 through, you can get them through Big Cartel. And if you're overseas from the UK, you can get a PDF. I'd really recommend you get it. It's an excellent comic.
A big shout out to Fraser, who sent us a copy of this with a lovely email. After hearing about Monty talk about the book, he wanted us to check it out for ourselves. And here we go.
Cool.
Because I only read it yesterday. I've got to order it tomorrow morning.
Yeah. And Dan loves his violent superhero type shenanigans. So if you please Dan Butcher by doing that, you are doing something right.
Yeah, it's an easy in if you want your comic reviewed on the show.
Yeah.
Either that or call it Generous Bosom.
Yeah. And I'm looking at it.
Yeah. And it's free. Vince looking at it.
Oh, nicely done.
Bastards.
Anyway, on that bombshell.
Oh, dear. My recommendation for this week is a book that has been out for a while. It's from Image Comics. And I just got back onto the new arc of the story. And the series I'm talking about is Southern Bastards.
Oh, okay.
Now, very good. Yeah, for those people out there who don't know what Southern Bastards is about, it's from Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. Jason Latour's name is shamefully off of the Amazon.co.uk page. I don't like it when they do that, when they don't, you know, if a artist is pretty much 50-50.
Yeah, they do that quite a lot at the moment, don't they?
Yeah.
It's like they don't have room for it. You know, it's like that, isn't it?
Yeah, they clearly do, though, don't they? Anyway, that aside, Southern Bastards is basically, it's a Southern fried sort of dirty town that needs a good dose of justice. It starts off about Earl Tubb comes back to his town. Earl Tubb is an angry man with a very big stick. And he comes up against Euless Boss, who's the town high school football coach. He's got no more room in his office for trophies and no more room underneath the bleachers for burying bodies. That's the way he describes it in the book. But they're building up a town in Castor County, Alabama. And it's very much, you know, southern fried noir. You know, we've had a surf noir. This feels very sort of, you know, it's brutal fried noir. It's southern fried noir. There's nowhere better to say it, you know. And Jason, anyone that knows, listens to this, will know that I'm a big fan of Jason Aaron's writing anyway. I think he is a true superstar of writing. And he always seems so nice when I hear him on podcasts and stuff. But this, he's done like it's a real sort of street level, dirty, grungy. It pulls no punches. It's brilliant, yeah. Sort of dramatic pacing. There are twists to it. It's just started the third arc. Yeah, I believe the third arc has just started, issue 14. The reason I wanted to talk about it is because this week, issue 14 came out where Earl Tubbs' daughter comes back to the town. Now, the town is a very racist town, and the town won't look kindly on her, shall we say. But she's also just come back from Afghanistan and knows how to kick a considerable amount of ass. And the way it sort of handles her coming up against just these ignorant, you know, it's almost like the town's full of horrible people. And just beautiful character moments, great sort of one-liners. There's a brilliant scene involving a dog that's just constantly shitting on a porch and how that gets dealt with.
The classic storyline.
Yeah. In the first sort of arc, someone gets hit in the face with like a deep fat fryer basket, which I can imagine would hurt quite a bit. While there's fat and chips in it. Brilliant character twists. And also, I like reading it in issues. I mean, I want to get all the I don't have the volumes yet. I've been reading it in single issues on Comixology. But I will say that when they end an issue, they know how to leave you wanting more. You know, they leave you on a like an oh shit moment. You know, there's always a lot of like, oh shit, something's, you know, what's going to happen in the next issue? Someone's going to get their ass kicked. But it also, the villains of the piece, and they are horrible villains, let's not beat around the bush. Anyone who's read this comic will know that there's some pretty despicable people in this. But Aaron and Latour, they really layer them. There's a lot more to these characters than meets the eye. So in some ways, they do an interesting trick of almost making you see things from the villain's perspective sometimes, of how they became the person that they are. But then that villain will do something so despicable that you realise, oh no, that person is a wanker. You know, have you been reading much of this, Tony? Have you read a bit of this?
I have. Yeah, I'm a bit behind. Yeah. I think I read the first arc, and I've got the rest piled up ready to read. But yeah, I really enjoy it. He doesn't flinch at like killing off perceived good guys, and you know, there's all that sort of thing going on. It, yeah, definitely, really good.
Yeah, I read the first trap. Yeah, go on, sorry.
I was going to say the art is quite nasty. It's always got like a nasty edge to it. It's like a next step on from Scalped. You know, I can see a straight line with that.
Yeah.
What are you going to say?
I read the first trade of that, and I was really surprised by how like brutal it was. If someone hits somebody else, it feels really heavy on the page.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And there's some like crazy like sequences. Like there's a fight towards the end of the first trade, and it's like Earl Tubb versus like all the bad guys in town, and it's just told in like squares, like, so the whole, like, it's a double page spread into like split into squares of just close-ups and sound effects. I really love that comic.
It does mess about. I mean a lot of people will read it in trade because they're doing the arcs in quite nice sort of chunks. They're like chapters of a book, really. You know, I mean, just for the covers alone, they've got like, there's a red palette that they use for all of the covers going all the way through.
It plays with preconceptions as well. You think it's going one way, don't you? And you think, oh, he's clearly the hero, or he's clearly the villain, and and it doesn't play off like that a lot of the time, you know.
Because the first arc is like focused on Earl Tubb, and we're with him, and then the second volume follows Coach Boss, who's like, you know, he's the big villain, he's a horrible villain, and they use quite a long arc to really mess with your preconceptions of that. And the third volume is the daughter that's come to the town, and that's the one I've been, you know, ever since it, you know, you got the first initial idea of what she was, I've been looking forward to her coming back to the town and sort of dispensing some justice. You could say it's almost like a, you know, that film Walking Tall. And obviously, yeah, it was remade with The Rock, but you know, it's that simple sort of, you know, it's that sort of like coming back to your hometown and dispensing some justice. It's that, yeah, in its bare bones, but there's going to be so many layers added on. You know, I'm sure, and you cannot say enough good things about Jason Latour's art. You know,
yeah,
I mean we love Jason Aaron, but Jason Latour is just the tour de force.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think they're good pals as well, aren't, yeah, they? They've been talking about this, yeah, for a while, yeah,
and they both sort of hail from that sort of part of America as well. So there's no sense of like trying too hard. There's no cliches. It's not really, you know, there's a real sense of, you know, these guys know what they're talking about. So yeah, yeah. And nice. It's violent, Dan, so you'll love it.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds great.
So there you go. What about Gareth? What do you want to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, I was so worried about the what have I been reading? I totally forgot about recommendations.
What was the 2000 AD? Right, what was the 2000 AD collection you were talking about?
Well, the best of 2000 AD.
Yeah, you briefly mentioned it.
Well, best of 2000 AD is like back in the 80s when they had all this like all these great stories and nowhere to print them. They just like once a month they just like collect a story and, yeah, shove it out on cheap paper, and for me personally it's the best way to read comics, like just the size and just the number, 64 pages, and I've just been picking them up from charity shops. It just feels like cheeky to be talking about the small press and supporting the small press, and I'm like sneaking off to charity shops to spend 50 pence.
I would.
yeah, he would.
So yeah, there's that. But I suppose one thing that I would recommend is that, again, I always talk about 2000 AD. I can't help it. But they've got a 50 pence sale on back issues at the moment on their website.
Cool. Oh, okay. Yeah, really?
And that includes they did extreme editions a few years ago, and
yeah,
I've been picking them up. And again, it's like a collected story of just like their best stuff, which they haven't put in like a glossy trade.
Yeah.
And one of those is hopefully still available, is Firekind by John Smith and Paul Marshall, I think.
Oh, okay.
God, probably have forgotten it now. And it ran in the progs when I was still reading them as a kid, and I loved them but didn't really understand them. And found out that when they were running, one of the most important episodes was like forgotten. They forgot to put it in 1 week, so nobody had any idea what was going on, just put it down to it being a really surreal story. But when it's collected, it's amazing. And it's sort of like, it's in the distant future, but it's about someone from Earth, like a German guy, who is sent out to explore and categorize new planets. So he goes to this planet and gets ingratiated with a tribe there and spends years and years just becoming part of the tribe and finding out how they work, and that's like the first half of it, getting to know. And it's a like some it's very similar to Avatar in some ways. That's what people, when people who had read Firekind saw Avatar, they're like, they've just nicked Firekind but made it more boring. But it's a really weird society, the way it's set up. So there's no sexes, and the way they reproduce is by like taking eggs out of each other's spines. And oh, yeah, and it's really graphic in that as well. It's like a ceremony, and it takes you through it panel by panel. And it's really, really fascinating. And then one of the things that's on this planet is like this really rare material. And so, like, mercenaries come to scavenge it and just, like, lay waste to this tribe. And then the rest of the comic is about how they cope with that and, like, how they fight back. And because it's John Smith, they end up essentially, like, destroying the entire fabric of that that universe. But it's a really good comic. And as I say, it's only 50 pence.
Cool.
One of the criticisms that sometimes comes up is that the art is quite straightforward. So, like, because it's John Smith and he's like quite a weird writer, people would have preferred it to have weird art to go with it. But I think the fact that everything's so clear and delineated, it makes it easier to follow the story. I think if the art wasn't as concrete as it is, you wouldn't have any idea what was going on. But because everything, and because, as I say, it's totally alien. Like, there's, although there's trees, they don't look like trees.
Right.
So, yeah, so weirdly, off the top of my head, Firekind is my recommendation if you can get hold of it.
Well, cool. Obviously you liked nice it, because you certainly, yeah, you had something to talk about, so it sounds pretty
good. Yeah. Well, yeah, I've just bought a second copy of it as well, in case my first copy gets broken.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope, my friend.
Oh, brilliant. So many awesome books for people to check out this week. And, yeah, thank you again for joining us this week, Gareth.
It's all right.
You've been...
yeah, definitely.
We already knew... we knew from London Super Comic Con that you were a gent, but now everyone else knows it too.
That's just a facade. People keep saying I'm nice.
He will protect you if you're eating your sandwiches. That's basically
it. He will, yeah. That's defender nice. Of sandwiches everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, God, I love sandwich. Do you guys love sandwiches? If so, there's several different ways you can tell us about it. You can email us. That was the weakest segue I've ever done.
Do you like eating sandwiches and cakes?
Anyway, get in touch with us and let us know what you thought of this show. There's several ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If there's any events or anything out there that we need to know about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @theawesomepod, and likewise, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com or whether you listen to us on iTunes. We're getting a few more people listening on iTunes these days. So, yeah, thank you for that. Leave us a lovely review, because, you know, the egos that we have need to be fulfilled. Yeah.
Constantly.
We're monsters, basically.
Constantly fluffed.
Yeah. The Constant Fluffer. There's a film there somewhere. Yes, and if you listen to us on Stitcher, thank you very much as well. Where can people find us on the internet, Tony, dare I ask?
Yep, Ezohyz is my Twitter handle. That's what they call it now.
Yeah.
You can find me in the Lomax NYPD fan club section.
We're going to talk more about Lomax next week on our 50th.
Yeah.
I can feel it in my very
quite
water.
Possibly the greatest comic ever created.
Yes, so that's the reason for tuning in next week, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or down the tubes.
Or downthetubes.net. Dan. Thank you.
I'm on Twitter @VanguardComic, and Vanguard returns week Wednesday, issue 12, and you can read that at vanguardcomic.com. Gareth, I'll be shouting shit out of that over social media, so apologies in advance if that becomes annoying.
Basically, everyone on this show this week is just really, really annoying. So you can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo, and you can find out more about my comic The Red Mass from Mars at theredmassfrommars.com. and Gareth, where can people find you online and on Kickstarter?
That's okay. So on Twitter, I'm Gerthink, which is, I have to explain it because I get called GRthink. It's Gareth with the vowels removed and then ink. And it was a total accident about 10 years ago, and I can't get rid of it. So,
like some sort of STD.
That I wear on my face every day. yeah, so it's GRTHINK. That's Twitter. That's also my website, so grgerthink.com. The Intercostal is at intercostal.com. And my Kickstarter, if you search Kickstarter for Intercostal 683, and it's on there. But if you do happen to find me on Twitter, then at least for the next 8 days, you will see nothing but links to my Kickstarter.
Yes.
I apologize. I've tried to set people up, especially on Facebook, where nobody really cares that I draw. They just want to see pictures of my kids in a nice way. Oh, Jesus. So I've apologised there that I'm just going to be really obnoxious until it's funded, at least.
At least you apologise. Most people don't.
Can I give a quick shout-out as well?
Yeah,
of course.
So Stuart John McCune, who I know you reviewed Monologue a few weeks ago.
Yes, yeah.
He kickstarted the second issue of that, and that funded. And he's doing, straight off the back of that, he's doing a really short, low target Kickstarter for Cold Colony, which is a 24-page comic.
Okay.
So yeah, everyone should go there. It's really reasonable as well. Yeah. So the print pledge is like £3 for the 24-page comic, which is for Kickstarter.
He's good at it as well.
Nice.
So yeah.
Blimey, so much to check out. Brilliant. Thank you again for joining us, Gareth. It's been awesome this week.
And, thank you.
Cheers, dude.
That's all right. and thank you, people out there, for listening. We really appreciate it. We've all gone slightly mad this weekend. Tony's complete. His brain's turned to, I don't know.
All gone wrong.
Yeah, yeah. How are you feeling, Tony? You're all right?
Feel a bit weird.
There's the audio clip that we can play whenever we get a text message from now on. Yes, so thank you all out there for listening this week, folks. And from Gareth, Dan, Tony, and myself, I almost forgot everyone's name.
I thought we were desperately trying to get that A in. Gareth, is it A Hopkins? Yeah, or it's just
you have been told, Vince.
Yes, well, look, he's A something. Anyway, right.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, everyone. And from everyone here, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
I win the hot tub. I don't care. I'll just let it out.
Just the number two comes out. You know what I mean?
What do you think? Here comes Krakatoa. Woo!